This is Miff Warhurst on ABC Radio.
There's been so much discussion of space and space exploration around the anniversary of the moon landing. Just a couple of days ago, one of my favourite chats has been about the sound of space. What does space sound like? Incredible recordings of planets and the noises that they make and the sounds that they make. Some of them are just so incredibly otherworldly. It blew my mind when we talked about it. So if you've missed that one, head to my program page on the ABC website, The Sounds of Space. If you've ever wanted to hear Saturn sing, you can. So there's many ways you can look at the impact of space exploration on our daily lives. And if you feel like you've had it up to here with Space Talk, we're about to take it next level, because what was known as the atomic age, of course, where space exploration was at the forefront of many of our imaginations, it really gave birth to a design aesthetic that embraced space. The final frontier actually kind of came into our homes, you could say, and it impacted in music, it impacted in design, in art, in food, in fashion. And we are going to explore this with a couple of experts, Darren Groves and Mitch Goodwin. How space fever swept the planet. Welcome, you two.
How are you?
Hey.
I'm super excited to have you both in here talking about some of my favourite things, which is mid-century design and, of course, that whole what they call atomic design. And, Darren, you brought in, just to start the conversation today, a little tin object, and it's round.
Isn't it fantastic?
It is beautiful looking, very streamlined. It's got tiny holes throughout the tin. It's hollow, and you can open it up in the middle, and it's got a lovely little handle. But you told me that this has been modelled on.
It's, well, in 1957, the Russians, of course, put the Sputnik into space, and that started the space race, really. And because it's such a kind of cool thing with technology, in terms of the sort of space age, I think the Sputnik started this sort of notion of looking at design from this outer space. So the humble little rice cooker and noodle cooker that you're holding there now, which is an Australian invention.
It's beautiful.
So that's from the late 50s or early 60s, was inspired directly from the shape of the Sputnik, this round orb that had antennae on it. And of course, Sputnik 2, which they put up quite soon after Sputnik 1, carried a dog. And of course, that dog has a kind of hero status these days, because of course, when you put a dog into a small ball and shoot it at high speed up into outer space, it's not going to survive for very long.
Poor little Laika.
I know, exactly. And but it's amazing how she's become a symbol of all kinds of kind of ethical standards in this sort of research now.
That is so true.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
You know. But there were so many things with Sputniks, and when you actually look at Sputnik water towers and Sputnik charm jewellery, and you know, in Brisbane there, the post office ball, used to have a big post office ball every year, and in about 1958 they had a Sputnik themed event up there, where in the ballroom they had a Sputnik that was on a wire that was flying across the ballroom.
I mean, very high tech.
Very high tech and very exciting.
Yeah.
I think, you know, and it's interesting how that kind of stuff was reflected in people's everyday lives, like making a bowl of rice, you know, here was the Sputnik.
So, absolutely. You know. And Mitch, how did you see space permeating popular culture? I mean, your area of expertise is film, TV, culture. What were some of the big ones for you that indicated this had really captured the imagination of that generation?
Oh, absolutely. The Earthrise image, I think, that they brought back from Apollo 8. From a cultural point of view, that set the narrative up about the environment. how precious that blue orb hanging in space actually was. And some of the campaigning that Stuart Brand did, he was part of the Merry Pranksters, of the Merry Express with the Grateful Dead and Ken Casey and all those guys. He lobbied for a picture of Earth from space, and he handed out little badges at demonstrations and tried to get everyone on board with this notion of what the Earth was in relation to the cosmos and how precious it was. And so that Earthrise image is, you know, on the front of the Whole Earth catalogue that he produced, which of course created a whole movement around sustainability and surviving in the world with nature. And so that drove that narrative about environmentalism, but also the repercussions of the fabrication of space. So Kubrick's design of space, which was such a unique vision at the time, and that influenced then the ideas around Bowie's Space Oddity, for instance, which, you know, he said he'd seen in various states of mind, but that really gave that desolate detachment of what an astronaut is like in space, and of that scene in 2001 when Commander Poole is floating off into the distance. And then we see that in Vertigo and the poster for Vertigo. We see it in different representations. And, of course, Bowie tapped into that idea of the horror, the fear of being left astride in space.
And being the oldest of the three of us,
yes.
I mean, I actually had a Whole Earth catalogue.
Did you?
Oh, there was another thing that he brought into, was called the Co-Evolutionary Quarterly, which I used to subscribe to as a student in the 70s. But also, I think the thing that that catalogue did, which tied into that notion of outer space, was the sort of, you know, living in Australia, it encouraged you to actually, in those days, no internet or it, but to write and to other people around the world and get stuff and information and buy books and buy stuff about domes and things. It really did sort of, that philosophy really encompassed that image,
I think the idea of the network of being a part of a global community really grew out of that period. And we have to remember that the ARPANET, which was the forerunner to the internet, was launched in 1969.
Right.
So there's that very strong metaphorical but literal link about the idea of the network, which is quite strong.
Yeah, well, we're talking right now about how space and our exploration of space has impacted so many elements of our life, in particular design and art and popular culture. I've got Dr. Darren Groves, Senior Lecturer in Architecture at the University of Melbourne, and Dr. Mitch Goodwin from the Faculty of Arts at the Uni of Melbourne too. There's a real optimism at this time. As human beings on Earth, space opened up a whole new way of thinking, and that found itself in the designs that were created. It's an optimism I haven't seen since, looking towards the future, celebrating what could be. Would you agree with that, Darren?
Yes, but you're right. But not everywhere. I mean, the moon landing completely screwed up Tomorrowland at Disneyland. after the moon landed, poor old Disney didn't know what to do with Tomorrowland. No. Because, you see, suddenly the present had caught up to the future. So once upon a time, with kids in Tomorrowland, you know, taking the rocket to the moon ride and all of these things was a big deal. But suddenly they just couldn't keep ahead of the game after 1969. And for many years, it was a big problem for Disney. And of course, finally, they concluded that what Tomorrowland would be was a kind of Jules Verne look at the future. So it was a sort of a 18th century view of what the future would look like, because they just couldn't keep up with, staying ahead of the game, especially in a kind of pre-internet, pre-kind of digital age where, you couldn't really create these images as we do now on a screen. In those days, you actually had to physically make it, and it was much more difficult, of course, to do that.
Yeah, of course. What would characterise a spacey look or some sort of space exploration look in design and in popular culture? You mentioned through the Kubrick films that there's very much a space aesthetic, which we don't even know really exists. It was a fantasy, I guess, of what life in space would be like. Because I think the reality is quite different up there on space stations than, say, a Kubrick spaceship. But how about in design?
Well, I think one of the first things that kind of started to imply that were fins.
Fins
from the 50s
on the cars.
And their cars. I mean, you know, you had that kind of, supersonic kind of imagery on that kind of thing. And so I think that's where it sort of started in the 50s with fins, and it kind of grew from there.
I'd say as well, looking at like Buckminster Fuller's domes and things, that idea of pods and domes and little outposts, and you know, there's that fabulously Camp Moon 1999, that TV show. I mean, Everyone's dressed in those, like, very kind of, you know, slinky little jumpsuits.
Great.
And I mean, it's just fantastic. And then you've got the more, you know, kinky Barbarella type look. But I also think there's this idea of the refined slipstream, you know, that we're moving quickly and that we're moving beyond time. And I think the space race enabled us to conceptualise what this idea was about, moving at great speed, at great distances. And that then is reflected in, like you're saying, fins. I mean, it's about speed and it's about empowerment that, I guess.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with costumes and things, the reflective materials and the Polaroid sunglasses, where, you know, the mirrored Polaroid sunglasses.
Of
all of this, I think, was the, you know, people kind of at a everyday level trying to engage with, you know, NASA and what was actually happening there. And it is a kind of positive, futuristic, optimistic kind of thing to do in your day. But sometimes, of course, it got to slightly ridiculous lengths. For instance, in 1970, the Valiant car, they had a Saturn motor, and of course, you know, where the Saturn rocket took them to the moon. I guess the implication was that the Saturn engine in your Valiant was going to get you down the street to the milk bar or whatever. So it's these sorts of I mean, it was a copywriter's wet dream, basically, to the moonshot. It really was reflected in so many products, and even products that didn't look like moon things had names and all sorts of things.
Well, we've got some examples of that. Dr. Darren Grove is with us, and Dr. Mitch Goodwin, and we are talking about the impact in art, in life, in popular culture, in advertising, in all sorts of things that space exploration and, in particular, the moon landing had on it. This is an advertisement for a drink that I was fed every day when I was a kid, and now look at it, it's probably not the right
look
idea.
At the problems it's caused.
But have a listen, even Tang,
isn't
the powdered
amazing?
Orange
Tang.
Juice drink,
Tang
weighed in on the space race. Let's take a listen.
With the success of the recent Apollo space flights, man has been brought another step closer to the moon. Aboard these manned Apollo flights, three astronauts, and with them, Tang. The energy breakfast drink with rich natural flavor and more vitamin C than orange juice. Still, Tang's biggest role isn't in NASA's space program. It's right here on Earth.
Right here on Earth.
That's beautiful.
Isn't that amazing?
So, that is amazing. Again, inspirational.
Again, you sort of see that thing that, and I think this, you know, this sort of happened, that the artificial thing is better than the original thing.
Mm. That very
Tang,
much
the
happened.
Artificial drink, is healthier. It contains more vitamin C than the real orange juice. And if there was, I guess, a downside of this stuff, it was the faith that we did put in technology, that this was going to save us all. And of course, you know,
look what
drinking Tang did to the three of us.
That's true.
Well, I was thinking earlier today, I mean, the kind of geopolitical scenario we have in the world at the moment is quite a sobering one.
Mm.
And to be thinking about the moon and the moonshot and the galaxy as an attainable thing and looking at it with such fervour and fondness is perhaps a distraction. And that we've become virtualized in our dreaming about space. So we're virtually going to Mars, we're virtually going to asteroids, we're living through things in a virtual sense.
Yeah.
And that idea of technology and being able to, I love the idea of a space food stick, you know, small enough to put in your helmet and gobble down while you're on your way to the moon.
Yeah.
But what the hell's in a space food stick?
That's right. That's right. I mean, in a way, are there parallels today? When the moon landing happened, there were at the political situation, Cold War, so many things happening. Was the space race a distraction, perhaps, for a way for people to remove themselves from the impending horror of what might be?
And I think there's two things happening at the same time. There was this idea that technology and the environment, the whole Earth catalogue was about being technically able to construct a hut or feed oneself and do a whole manner of different things and being aware of the environment. But at the same time, people were very concerned about that meshing together of the environment and technology. And Norman Mailer's articles for Life magazine, that he documented the Apollo 11 lead up to the launch and the experience of the astronauts, he was very concerned and apprehensive about what this all meant. What did it mean to have a payload that could be interchanged with, you know, a nuclear weapon rather than three astronauts?
And I mean, you mentioned the kind of virtual, the quality of these sort of virtual worlds. But I was 13 when the moon landing happened. We watched it at school, and it seemed to me that, you know, hours were spent watching a black and white screen that was a bit like looking at a bad photocopy. I mean, it wasn't the sort of, you know, now people imagine this sort of virtual world and the quality of that kind of imagery. It wasn't like that as I remember it in 1969.
Space food sticks were not the answer to all of our problems, even though we've got the advertisement for it right here.
Today, the United States is engaged in a gigantic effort to send men to the moon. For this effort, Pillsbury has developed many special foods. Here is the first one to be made available to the public, Space Food Sticks. To meet the demands of a long space flight, Space Food Sticks had to be a compact, nutritious, high-energy food. That's why they make the perfect between-meal energy snack. Energy for hard play. Energy for hard work. Lasting energy to feel alive. If that sounds better than some of the things your family fills up on between meals, you should try Space Food Sticks for good nutrition and lasting energy in a chewy, tasty snack food. Chocolate, caramel, and peanut butter, about 44 calories, at your grocer's next to the instant breakfast section. Space Food Sticks, the energy snack from U.S. Aerospace Research and Pillsbury.
From U.S. Aerospace Research. Were they really part of the research team?
And they'd still rot your teeth.
Yes, exactly.
That's the thing.
It still gets sick.
I know. It's incredible.
It is incredible. Dr. Darren Groves is with us and Dr. Mitch Goodwin. We are talking about the impact of space and space exploration that it's had on our everyday design, popular culture. It was huge. We've got a text here from Jane, and she said, do your interviewees think the idea of mass travel on the back of hippie overland travel was influenced by the moon landing? She said, we moved outside our sovereign borders to explore the other. Do you think the moon landing sparked in particularly Western culture that desire to open themselves up to the rest of the world?
I think it's a bit of a long bow. I think that was happening anyway. I remember, you know, by myself buying the, people might remember it, the Qantas catalogue that had Carly Simon on the front. I mean, everybody was sort of trying to, in those days, get out of Australia one way or the other. But certainly, I think, going back to what we were saying about the whole Earth catalogue, it did have the effect of actually shrinking the Earth, and this sort of feeling that things were much more closer than we actually had. Because I think seeing that image must have had a profound effect on what people thought about where they actually lived. You know, just that one picture was incredibly influential, I think.
Yeah, and all the astronauts reflect on that, whether they got to the moon or not, seeing the Earth from afar. And I think at that time, if you think about the Rolling Stones or the Beatles, they were thinking alternatively, and they were popularising different ways of thinking and the thinking behind different cultures, and bringing that on, not only musically, but, you know, the idea of being turned on. You know, it's not just about outer space, it's all about inner space as well.
So there were lots of things happening at the same time, I think, that sort of, you know, to answer the texters, you know, there were lots of things happening that I think influenced that.
Let's talk about more design in the home. Simple objects like televisions and radios, all of a sudden, I mean, as a collector, I collect
that
60s
fantastic
and 70s
JVC
electrical equipment and the orange ball spaceship style.
You know, and you can see where it came from, the imagery of that came from, you know, from the astronauts' helmets. There was so much like that, the record players that had domed tops on them.
I had a spaceship record
you had
player.
One of those.
I bought one, but this only recently,
I mean, Sanyo brought out a transistor radio that kind of looked like a UFO, basically. I mean, there were lots of things to play with, and that was called the Apollo. You know, those names that Luna, Apollo, Saturn, you know, Barta brought out moonshot shoes for boys.
Where in the sole you would get an astronaut printed in, so every time you took a step, you were taking one small step for an astronaut.
I know. It's incredible, really.
amazing
stuff.
Can we link the microwave oven to our ideas of what we needed to create for space travel?
Well, there was one particular brand of microwave oven called the Amana Radar Range, and its claim to fame was that Amana Radar is the only electric microwave oven approved by NASA, and the American astronauts Aldrin, Armstrong and Collins ate their first back-to-Earth meal prepared on an Amana Radar Range oven. So, you know, microwaved hot...
TV dinner.
Exactly. That's what they ate when they came back.
Not up there, though.
Absolutely.
Just finally, space exploration made its way to ladies' hosiery, didn't it?
Oh, look, I tell you what. My favourite quote was from Kaiser. They made lunar print slips. And it said, "Okay, so it's a man's world you're in. Then let them turn riot over you. The lunar slips, out of this world, but beautiful in the bedroom. So much so, they make even a strong man moon over you." Kaiser's lunar prints for those adventurous, loving girls who don't want to come down to Earth. Now, I'm sure the copywriter is now working for the Trump administration.
Absolutely. Oh, look, this has been fascinating, Dr. Darren Groves.
I thought we could get through it without mentioning Trump.
Dr. Mitch Goodwin. thank you so much.